The best hip hop is eloquently intelligent, lyrical, satirical. Oh, there he's kind of rhyming here too. Even politically critical. A worthy offspring of blues, jazz, and soul. This is a real head here. This is a real head. This could be in Pitchfork, but it's in international.org.
Yeah. It might have been like cross-posted in Pitchfork. Yeah.
But the hip-hop scene has long been dominated by gangsta rap.
Mm.
And gangsta ideology is
spelled
one of the...
how?
My STA. Friend.
Yeah.
Spelled correctly.
That's how you know it's a connoisseur.
It'd be hilarious if they read gangster rap.
Gangster rap.
And gangsta ideology is one of the many ways through which capitalism exerts its control over the exploited and the oppressed.
Okay.
Well, let's get in. That's the next paragraph is about that, if you want to read that, Sean.
Really anthropomorphizes capitalism there. But that's okay. This is rhetorical. The gangsterization of society is a typical expression of decomposing capitalism. In Russia, the mafia is almost indistinguishable from the ruling political elite. In Liberia or Sierra Leone, the gangs are armed to the teeth and engaged in civil war. In the U.S. urban ghettos, the gang has become the refuge for the most dispossessed, a pseudo-community offering them a means of day-to-day survival. But just as in Africa, the armed gangs become instruments of competing imperialisms. So in New York or L.A., the gangs are in no way an expression of proletarian revolt, as the self-proclaimed communists of Aufheben once suggested. Ooh, sick bird.
Got their asses.
Take that, end notes. On the contrary, they function as instruments of capital's totalitarian occupation of social life.
So I think this slam at Aufheben here, this battle rap that they just started against Aufheben, references their essay about the Rodney King riots, where they put a sort of positive reading on it and said that it was a multiracial revolt where tens of thousands of proletarians of different backgrounds, including gang members, united to riot for several days after the Rodney King verdict.
And it was good. As long as you weren't Reginald Denny, you were all right. Remember that guy? He got a brick to the head.
Oh, yeah.
Truck driver.
He field goal celebrated it, right?
Yeah, that was tough.
It was a big deal. It's not great.
He had like brain damage.
That's not great.
What do our OG guests think so far of this thesis?
Where's the lie?
I think, it's good.
Okay.
It's confusing a lot of things. Like, it wants to say the gangsterization is a typical expression of decomposing capitalism. So Russia, they use as examples, Russia, West Africa, it seems, and American urban ghettos. Like, does Africa had capitalism, but is it fair to say it's decomposing in the 2000s? Like, Russia, it depends on what you think the Soviet Union was. I tend to think it was capitalism, but like it's decomposing in a different way than like you could imagine capitalism decomposing in like New York or LA. Like, what does it mean that capitalism's decomposing there? So I'm not sure their thesis stands. And also like attributing like some ideology to capitalism. Capitalism, I think, has a lot of different ideologies. It's very pat. I understand they're trying to be rhetorical here and they're trying to be like political, but like I don't know if I really buy all the analogies they're making here.
When they bring in Aufheben, it just makes it sound like this person read an Aufheben essay and got mad.
Yeah. Right. Years before Twitter even existed, ICC was making up somebody to be mad at. And that was Aufheben.
But I think that the kernel of truth is that there is a sort of rhetoric that I've heard that's like, well, the gangs were initially political.
Right.
Like the Black Panthers and the Young Lords, or you even hear this about the Crips.
Yeah.
That they were political street gangs, and then through like the repression of the state, like, you know, killing or arresting and incarcerating any member once they turn like 20, it just gets passed down to younger and younger people who are more hot-headed. And so, like, the wisdom of the streets isn't passed down from older members to younger members. And for that reason, there is often this rhetoric about, like, well, the gangs are actually could actually be good if they united and fought.
Right.
And this is saying, no, the gangs are just criminal enterprises.
Right. Yeah, they are. I think they're going to get into more broadly what the gangs are up to, but they... they attribute this gangsterization to like decadence theory, I guess, right? They must have some sort of decadence theory. So, you know, it's like the turn of the 21st century and they're talking about the decomposition of capital. Like this is what's left in the wake, I guess, of capital accumulation, this gangsterization and this ideology.
All right, let's read another paragraph here.
Yeah.
This is obvious at the level of commerce. Gangsta culture is a conduit for the drug trade, the weapons trade, and even the fashion industry. Mm. Nike, Reebok, and other labels are inseparable from the gangsta image. Mm. But gangsta is also a political ideology, a packaging of revolt, channeling rebellion into new forms of division. The rap group Public Enemy once chanted the slogan, "Fight the power." But the influence of black nationalism on such groups ensures that the real power, which exploits all colors with equal zeal, remains hidden from view. Black nationalism, together with gangsta's infamous demeaning of women and gays, is a means of dividing the proletariat, of obliterating its class identity.
Mm. 2004 was such a different time, man. It's like nice to like, you know, settle back down in with this rhetoric. It's naive. Naive, nice rhetoric. I mean, this is all true. I think this is all true. I think that their zinger against black nationalism, it hits pretty home, pretty
but it's
well,
really right? A zinger against Public Enemy. It's yeah. Like, well, Public Enemy appear to be black nationalists, and therefore they're probably homophobic. Which, you know, maybe, but...
Yeah, I mean...
It's a little more complex than just those two things.
I mean, there's a dialogue between Chuck D and Angela Davis... Where he breaks down his ideology, and let's just say she had no problem calling him out on it.
Okay, all right. No,
the Public Enemy was really contradictory, actually, because they had this rhetoric of, fight the power, revolution, but their primary ideological influence was the Nation of Islam. And so you can only go so far within that framework before you butt up against, you know, homophobia, misogyny, and all the rest of it. And you know, I really like this essay. You know, I think it's maybe it's because I find myself in this kind of like 21st century anarchist scene that fetishizes lumpen criminality and imagines that the people who commit petty crimes are secretly a part of this like revolutionary movement that we are all in. And it's really dangerous, and to me it's actually really sad because it's like a refusal to face just how alone you truly are. Mm-hmm. If you think that like the kids doing sideshows and the people who looted in 2020 for the purpose of reselling items, you know, that are on the same political wavelength as you, you're really underestimating the enormity of the task ahead.
Right, or just assuming it based on like you see the same media reports on. That could go to Fox News or whatever, and you're just like, no, actually, it's good.
But if you open
they're breaking
up,
the law, and the law is bad.
There's
so
a long history of this. If you open up the Situationist Anthology, it's a great essay that Guy Debord wrote about the Watts riots. I use great advisedly. You know, about how it was like a direct assault on the commodity form, you know, like the liberation of all these commodities, that the looting, that there was something, you know, inherently anti-capitalist to it. Going way back in the French and American tradition to lionizing the lumpen, as Jared says, in this sense, the ICC does get it right, pointing to like the packaging, I think, especially the turning of like a particular lifestyle, life way, let's call it, means of reproducing, you know, that people have attained through the 20th century, packaging this into like a commodity, an ideology that can then be sold back to the masses.
And then also
as a pseudo revolt.
And also sort of the political aspect of it becoming racialized in terms of like black nationalism. And so how will it be overcome? How will there be the reintroduction of anti-racism?
Tupac Shakur.
No.
They missed the opportunity to bring in Tupac. They could have got a zinger on the Black Panthers. You know?
And I think it's worth emphasizing that it's like the way that it's written sounds like a conspiracy theory. And I'd imagine the person who wrote this is probably pretty young. But there is a certain element of truth to it that the market, like the record industry, decides when a particular trend or a style of music breaks into the mainstream or appears profitable. They decide who among those artists gets elevated. Right. And which ones are going to be sidelined. Mm-hmm. So if you look at like, for instance, think about like the MC5, right? Mm-hmm. They face tremendous pressure to break ties with John Sinclair and the White Panther Party as a kind of a precondition for being a successful rock and roll band. And it was like their association with the motherfuckers and with anarchism got them banned from a lot of the touring circuit in the late 60s, right? Meanwhile, artists that had less of a problem with shedding that kind of politics from that Detroit scene were able to soar. And I think you could see something similar with rap. There's a lot of rap that actually has like positive class struggle content. And it's not the kind of stuff that you hear on the radio. The radio, like if you listen to hip hop radio now, it's amazing. It's like the id of capital. It's just like, you can just turn it on, make money, money, make money, work, 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 work. All I care about is work. Fuck you. All I want to do is work. Fuck women and work. It's unbelievable. It's like the advertisements in They Live or something like that.
Yeah, it's probably no coincidence that you see a number of rappers vocally supporting Trump. Not necessarily because there's any one thing Trump is saying or the Trump program really appeals to them, but they see him as like a symbol of capital and power and wealth, and like is a attractive image.
That's been the case for a long time, I think, right? Like Trump's got shout outs in gangster rap for decades now.
I remember, I'm old enough to remember when gangsta rap ideology and the package came into the public consciousness. You know, hip hop before that and rap before that, at least from what I saw as like a suburban white kid, was like positive. You know, it's like Mr. Wendell, yeah. I forgot who's saying that. Like nice songs about like homeless men and like taking like journalistic sort of stuff. Like a black nationalist element too. But then all of a sudden inundated by this like new style, and they were all like this whole pantheon of different heroes from NWA to Ice Cube and so on and so forth, Dr. Dre. And it was a real phenomenon, you know, and changed, I think, a lot of the ways that people understood music and the world. And I do believe there's something confected about that. It obviously comes from a lot of
those MCs also had to sort of conform to that image. Like right, they had to rebrand themselves as gangsters. Even
MC Hammer famously, right? Remember, he used to wear the big hats or the big pants, rather. And he used to be like, he wasn't too legit to quit, was he? Too legit. Yeah, that was too legit to quit. But then when gangster rap became a thing, all of a sudden he like thugged out and he had like a baseball cap and he's like, please Hammer, don't hurt him. Like even he, this like relatively like old school positive rapper guy, all of a sudden had to fall in line. So I agree, there's something confected. There's like a social contagion aspect to it, and there's a money-making aspect to it, certainly.
And this gets back to the things that we were talking about with the Rikers section that we just recorded, in that there's a certain kind of ideology that people have to adopt to survive terrible situations. And unfortunately, in our moment in history, the way that people tend to view themselves is as just in a state of war with all other people, and it's a distinctly kind of liberal capitalist perspective where I am this individual monad and everybody else is my competition, and I think that a lot of the worst of culture, and it's not just rap. It's like you could look at this with like all the
Bravo TV.
The shitty, well, every what's on TV at night? Yeah, it's like competition,
reality
like
TV
reality bullshit. Shows where people compete for like 20 people compete for one job while the boss insults them, or where like 20 men compete for one woman, or like even like if you look at like the rise of just like really shitty, nasty rock and roll music in the 80s, it's kind of similar to gangster rap. It's just like fuck everything. All that matters is like a commodity accumulation. Like lots of like nasty homophobia and misogyny. I mean, there's not much that in gangster rap that you can't find in like a Guns N' Roses record. Mm. But like the moral panic was around rap for racial reasons. Mm-hmm. But this is like the ideology of people who have basically given up on communal solutions to problems and view crisis as something that needs to be survived on an individual basis.
Mm-hmm. And so hip hop, in the early 2000s has reached this sort of cul-de-sac of like representing gangsterism or at best black nationalism. But then according to this essay, a savior emerges. You want to read this part, John?
I can do it, sure. Where were we? We're talking about black. Eminem, of course, has managed to cross the racial divide.
Wait, what? Go on, please.